is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we are offering five conversations from episode 5. I will look at the role NITs will play in 2024 with Naeem Alkhouri and Ian Rowe. Plus, from the vault, our first discussion of MASEF last summer. This opening conversation explores why proper use of non-invasive tests, or NITs, will play a pivotal role in increasing the number of patients diagnosed and treated for MASH. It will become particularly pivotal if, as expected, the first MASH drug is approved later this month. I start this conversation by describing why I consider NIT use and adoption one of the two pivotal patient treatment issues for 2024. The rest of the conversation centers around the impact the clinical care pathway recommendations and guidelines have had, which is minimal. George Schottenberg and Naeem Alkhouri each report that they have received no new primary care or endocrinology referrals based on an elevated FIB4, which is what you'd expect from the pathways and the guidelines. Ian Rowe describes the experience in the UK as different based on firm guidelines, but expresses concern that the NITs of today are insufficiently precise to stage patients properly. After availability of a MASH drug, making proper use of NITs in diagnosing, staging, and tracking patients remains a critical challenge for 2024. There's a great deal to reflect on, and we cover a lot of territory here. So just sit back, listen, learn, enjoy, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. As we've been trying to do in the run-up to the Madrigal PDUFA date on March 14th, we've been taking a look at some of the different issues that are going to shape 2024. And this, I think, is in some ways the most important of the ones we've tackled so far. Because when you ask stakeholders, virtually any category, what are the rate-limiting factors for the acceptance of the need to treat disease, the two practical ones that you wind up on, and they're the two that seem to matter most in most people's minds, are A, we don't have a drug, and B, the testing protocols are challenging and confusing. Well, in theory, we'll know the answer to we don't have a drug on March 14th, and I think we're all pretty optimistic that that'll be a good answer, and that won't be an issue anymore. So then we go to the second one, which is going to bedevil us for quite a while, I would guess, which is NITs, and how to do a good and efficient job of screening the patients that we've got to get into the process, and what do we have to do to enroll the different stakeholders all on the clinical care pathway in playing their roles. So today, I want to break that into two issues. A, what's in front of us today, and B, what might come along later in the year. And by today, I mean literally today. So when we think about the starting point for all the clinical care pathways, we start on FIB4. That's one of the places I just wanted to start. How do we feel about FIB4 right now in terms of practical, widespread use at the beginning of the screening process? It's certainly what all the guidelines ask for. Has its strengths, it has its challenges. Where do you see all this going and how do you see it rolling out? Brave one, go first.
Jörn Schottenberg.
Roger, I'm going to say something and then hand it over to Naeem and of course Ian, who's been doing extensive work in the UK around that and more academically. I have to say, I still haven't really received referrals based on FIB4, and it's unfair to demand so because really we don't have an approved treatment. I think that's, for my practice, still a hurdle. Now, that might not be lasting much longer because we're there almost and we're building activities. Activities Naeem and Stephen Harrison have been doing to inform colleagues, do general hepatology updates, informing our colleagues to get them ready for drugs for our patients and decide who should be referred. But I would say at this time, we're still preaching and I haven't seen it in much activity. So there's needs more to be done, but we have all the data available, I would say. And this is how I would like to take the first shot at goal for my referring physicians here in my neighborhood.
Okay. Naeem, go ahead.
Naeem Alkhouri.
I have the same situation like you and I keep telling my colleagues and APPs, advanced practice practitioners, that we have not received one referral for elevated FIB4 from an endocrine office or primary care office. I think we discussed this at a previous episode, Roger. My issue is that, you know, FIB4 is definitely available. It's cheap. I like the pathway. I think it's better than the status quo. The problem is if you go by the 1.3 cut point as the cut point you're going to use to send patients for fiber scan or order the ELF test. It's a lot of patients, especially if you take patients with type 2 diabetes. Now we're going to ask endocrinologists to send us about 1/3 of their patients to get a fiber scan, which is not widely available. And then when we do the fiber scan, about 70% of these patients will have low liver stiffness. So now we send them back to the endocrinologist. And then we say, oh, do this every 1 to 2 years. And that frequency, to be honest with you, is mind-boggling to me. I don't understand how we came up with this, especially in patients with type 2 diabetes. diabetes, I mean, with the disease that takes a long time. And, you know, people say, oh, it doesn't cost anything, so do it. But I'm like, no, it does cost a lot of money to the healthcare system between, you know, the referrals and patients, you know, having to pay copays and then us finding time to see them, doing the FibroScan to send them back to endocrinology. So what I would like to see is, FIB4 is great. I'm not asking to change the algorithm, but I would like to see democracy when it comes to NITs, where you can actually combine FIB4 with a way to measure liver stiffness. There's so many new developments. Actually, at the Desert Liver Conference, we had four companies exhibit their technologies that all of them can give you a CAP score and also liver stiffness. So in addition to FibroScan, we had Eascopix with the hepatoscope. We had MindRay. They also have a liver scope. And then we had Velicure from Sonic Insights. And at the end of the day, I would say access to any of these endocrine or primary care office would be the way to go. So you do the FIB4, then you follow with the FibroScan or similar technology, and then you send us patients with liver stiffness more than 8. Then your positive predictive value and the yield of the referral is definitely much, much better than just relying on FIB4. So again, 1.3, great to rule out, but you know, if you're going to send patients based on the 1.3, it's a problem. And the algorithm is based on FibroScan, which is not widely available. And then ELF in the United States, the reimbursement is not good at all. And we're struggling with copays and patients coming back to us, asking us, why do I have to pay this much money for blood tests? No one mentioned this to me. So these are the real issues, real life issues we're dealing with.
So Ian, let's go across the pond. You're not going to have resmetirom in a month under any circumstances, but what do you foresee around this whole issue in the moment?
Ian Rowe.
So I think there are a few things. One is that our local commission pathway means that every patient that we see who's got an elevated ALT in the context of metabolic risk factors has a FIB4 and now has a FibroScan, and we don't see them unless their FibroScan is more than 10. And we can debate thresholds and cutoffs and who are the most appropriate patients to see and all the rest of it. But the big issue, as I see it, around, you know, the potential availability of resmetirom is the population. So we've got a model that looks to identify patients who've got significant liver disease, meaning advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis. But if we're going to come and make a treatment decision in a population that's got significant fibrosis or advanced fibrosis but not cirrhosis, then that is an even bigger ask of the non-invasive tests. What we're trying to solve at the moment with the referral pathways is a relatively simple problem, which is to identify only patients above a threshold. Whereas when we come to the treatment decision, it's going to be both patients above and below a threshold. And that's going to be really, really tough.
What makes that so hard?
Well, because the cutoffs are not absolute. To identify people who've got significant fibrosis, then be looking at a sort of a positive predictive value that's not 100%. Whereas to exclude cirrhosis, you're also looking at a value that doesn't have 100% negative predictive value. So the range is going to be very narrow between those two values. And so you're going to end up excluding a lot of patients who would be potentially eligible for treatment, because the only area of certainty is the very narrow center in the middle between, you know, your sort of early disease cutoff and your cirrhosis cutoff.
And now back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's episode, possibly a payer episode, possibly something else. Watch, listen to this space for details. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.